we have a guest today.
An amazing guest.
I'm so excited. Our first guest of 2023. And, you know, we start as, I mean, we're just starting at the top.
Everybody, those were the dulcet tones of Kate Claiborne. You are, if you're a long-term listener of the pod, have heard her here before talking about Derek Craven, talking about her books, talking about whatever crazy things we lure her into talking about.
I bit seven times.
Lucky number seven.
Yeah.
If this was a marriage, you'd be ready to break up with us.
Yeah. Don't forget the sick bed. I'll never break up with you guys.
It's
right. The sick bed episode where you actually co-hosted, you pinch hit.
Yeah. When Sarah was probably had COVID.
Probably had COVID.
I'm a devoted,
fated mate, hanger on is what I am.
Fated triad. Here we are.
They're perfect. I love it.
Welcome to Fated Mates, everyone. I'm Jennifer Prokop, a romance reader and editor.
I'm Sarah McLean. I read romances and I write them. And today we are here with one of our very, very favorite people and one of our very, very favorite authors, Kate Claiborne. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, everyone.
I'm very excited. We're moving everything out of the text box just for the next hour.
Yes.
The next hour.
Raw, unfiltered.
The text box will be quiet.
Vika, do not leave me, punches window.
Yeah, and then for the rest of the day, the text box will be probably me texting, like, did I say anything weird during that?
and you guys reassuring me.
Hopefully saying so much weird stuff.
Yeah.
We can't wait to release that episode.
It's going
to
be fantastic. And Kate, the reason you're here with us today is because yesterday, your newest book, Georgie All Along, came out, and we want to hear all about it.
Yay!
That's right!
Cue wild applause.
Yes, I'm very excited. When you were talking, it like took me a minute to think. I was like, what am I doing here? That's the headspace I'm in right now. But yes, Georgie is out in the world, officially.
And so we excited. Love it.
We do love it.
It might be my favorite Kate Claiborne. It might be my favorite Kate Claiborne book. I need to think about it.
It's sure. It's one or two, I think.
Oh, my
goodness. It's really
goodness.
Way up there.
It's
what an honor.
Already on the best of the year list here at Fated Mates.
Oh, boy.
Guaranteed.
I am honored. It is a very special book to me.
Well, we're going to talk all about why. In fact, why don't we do that now?
Seems like okay. What a transition.
Seems like the appropriate next transition.
So tell us about Georgie, Kate.
So Georgie is my tribute to kind of small town romance, but also homecoming romance, kind of coming home to a small town, which is a subgenre that I like a lot or that I gravitate toward when I read. And it's also the book where I really wanted to write a messy heroine, which that honestly does not feel like it is my ministry. I'm going to be really stressed. So writing this book challenged me a lot, and I think of all the books I've ever written, I think I learned the most from Georgie. So she's really special to me as a character.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting that you bring that piece up, because I mean, anybody who knows you knows that like mess is not a Kate Claiborne.
Kate does not like mess.
Kate does not like mess.
I don't love mess.
In like any of its forms, like a true Virgo. In fact, I believe I did Kate's chart once and she's a double Virgo, which might actually be more information than Kate would like you to have.
I am a double Virgo. It's okay. You know, I think probably most people within 10 minutes of meeting me would be able to tell.
A double Virgo. How surprising. And so I want to talk about this because as a writer, I think a lot about, you know, obviously you think a lot about characters when you write books. But it isn't very common, I think, for us to write characters who are so different from ourselves. Like, I often think like, oh, I write heroines who are aspirational for me, right? Like, I wish I was more like that person. But it almost feels like there's always like a seed of like writing into my own like personality in a lot of ways. Can you talk more about like, how do you craft a
character who is so different.
Not aspirational for you.
Yeah. I think one way I did it was, I have, I think, a couple of like anecdotes about this in terms of the writing process that might help sort of understand it. One is that when I was writing Georgie, I think part of what I had to do was write about the things that I like fear in myself or try to suppress in myself. So, you know, like Georgie does embrace more chaos than I do in my life, right? Yeah. So one of the things I had to do was like think a lot about the things that I don't allow to happen in my life. you know, I would never pack my stuff up in garbage bags like Georgie does in the scene of the book. So it's like thinking a lot about things that, you know,
you would never leave one job before you had another lined up.
Yes, that's right. So like thinking about things that I wouldn't do and sort of trying to explore, like trying to put myself in those situations, like imagine what they would feel like. And every time I would find it difficult, you know, it's like I had a Lauren Billings of Christina Lauren. She and I were texting a lot during the time I was writing it. And she'd be like, just like lean into it. And I had to like really try. I had to think a lot about how Georgie would be in certain situations because it is different from how I would be in almost every situation. And then the other thing I would say is that when I was like early in the writing process and I felt like I kind of hit a wall and was like, oh, I just don't know if I'm getting this character right. I called my editor, Essie Soga, who was my editor for this book. And I told her I was having a really hard time, told her where I was sort of stumbling. And she said she wanted me to open a new document. And she wanted me to title it, Georgie Mulcahy is a Mess. And that meant like abandoning my little Scrivener document with all my chapter divisions and all this stuff and just like start a fresh Word document and write
what that would be.
Mess. And those two things were really helpful to me, like just helping me embrace mess, even in my writing process a little bit more than I normally do.
So Georgie is coming home to her hometown. Her parents still live there. Off of a pretty interesting career path, which is that she's been working in Hollywood as an assistant for someone who she likes. It was not a bad job. She actually was really great at it because she could embrace sort of how chaotic and messy and how many different things she was doing. But now she's back home and it's sort of, she's really at sea. And I think the thing that's interesting is how she comes to find herself again is by reconnecting with something she was writing with her best friend when she was a teenager.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about why that notebook was so important? I can't remember the fan.
Yeah, she has what's called like a friend fic. So yeah. She and her friend used to pass this notebook back and forth and they would write in it. They started it when they were like in middle school, like right on the cusp of starting high school. And they would pass it back and forth and put in there like all the things they imagined themselves doing in high school. And I know some people are going to read that and be like, this is really weird. But I want you to know that I had one of these notebooks. I did not write about like my dreams for high school. My friends and I wrote about like the celebrities we were going to end up marrying, which is more embarrassing.
No, sure. That's perfect. That's exactly what I want.
But
I mean, that's kind of what our text book is now. Like, right? We're like, this guy's very handsome.
The only difference is that Cillian Murphy didn't exist when Kate was in high school.
That's right. That's you know it. What? Right. If sure. he had, I probably would have turned out very different. anyway, so I liked the idea of, you know what, this is probably more personal than I would typically share, but I had that friend fic in my possession for many, many years, and I shredded it
because I tend to do that, right? Like, I don't like mess, right? I'm like, what do I need this for? Also, this is like...
Also, no one can ever... Like, yeah, I don't want like, these no one public... It's like Jane Austen's letters.
Yeah, it's just like this is an embarrassing record of how I felt about speed. Like, let me... like, I don't have it anymore, right? But Georgie would never do that, right? Like, Georgie would find something like that and be like, this is amazing, right? And so in some ways, like thinking about that record of something I didn't keep, let me think about, you know, Georgie as a character.
That's really interesting. You've never said that. I didn't know this story. And we moved recently and I found a box in like on a high shelf that I had been moving from apartment to apartment to apartment over 20 years. And I discovered that inside of this box were all of my diaries from, like, middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down with them and I opened them all up. And, like, middle school age, Jen can attest to this, middle school age girls are just completely, like, unearthly. Like, they're not of this plane. And as you read every page of these diaries, you're like, oh, this is... like deeply unhinged, like all of this. But I did save them all because I was like, you know what? Someday my daughter is also going to be unhinged. And I'm going to say, let me show you.
Right. Yeah. This was
so you are not alone.
This is interesting. This is confession time. I kept diaries in college and in the past 5 years, maybe found them. And I opened them up and was like, oh, no, thank you. And I did. I got rid of them all.
You got rid of them.
I did.
I mean, did you shred them or set them on fire?
No, I think I just threw them away. And
what?
I just, yeah, I did. I just felt like...
even worse, someone might find them.
You know what it was? And this is, I think, the part that's, like, interesting and different than, like, me and Georgie is, like, in particular, I was reading this one section of my diary. There's this guy I was really in love with when I was a senior in college. And I... my friend Sean, I was, like, talking a lot about how, like, I felt like Sean was always trying to get in between me and Paul. And, like I didn't realize Sean was gay. Like, I don't know how. And I'm like, well, I think Sean probably liked Paul, too. Like, and I just was so embarrassed by how, like, oblivious I was. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't comforting. It wasn't something like I want to go back to being this person, which is, I think, what Georgie feels like. You know, who was this person? I'm interested in this person. I was just like, thank God I'm not that person anymore. And I'm going to go ahead and just move on from that. So I literally was like, click and goodbye. Yeah.
But I think that's the beauty of the homecoming romance, which is what we're all here to talk about, right? Because I think in many ways it's easier to face those documents of your youth where you were maybe messier than you would like to be. When you are not also home, you know,
that's pretty fascinating. Yeah.
In the place with the people, in many cases, the space that you were in when those documents were relevant. And I think the beauty of the homecoming romance is the reckoning with who you were and who you are. And that's what Georgie does so well. Who you thought you were, who you thought you would become, who the world thought you were, the whole nine.
Yeah, and I think that's very, you know, Georgie, when she comes home, I think she is surrounded by people who remember her from, you know, her youth and adolescence, sort of like some of our messiest times. And they remember her as, like, flaky you know, like, not great at school or kind of inconsistent. And, you know, most people don't let her forget it. And I think that is something I also really love about homecoming romances, right? Like, when you show up, the stuff that you are... carrying with you that you maybe were allowed to forget about while you were gone.
Right. You have to open that garbage bag.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think the thing, though, that's also really interesting, because we haven't talked about Levi at all, is that he is carrying his own baggage around about who he was supposed to be or who people think he still is. And so, but he doesn't have like that. He doesn't have like the warmth and kindness, right? Or any way of even seeing like himself like that, even really. And so it's also really interesting how they're an echo of each other in that way. Like, how do I be the person I can still become if I can't really reckon with the person that I was or the things that happened or the way my family treated me or the way I treated them? And I think that's the part that's also really interesting, and is that she finds someone who has a similar struggle.
Yeah, I think both of them believe the worst version of their reputation around town. Uh-huh. Like deep down, both of them believe it, and they are both sort of like haunted by it in different ways, right? Like I think between Georgie and Levi, sort of the seriousness of their reputations is different and things like that. But yeah, they connect through that. And that was interesting to write too, because a lot of times, you know, like when you're writing a romance, a lot of times what you're doing is you're putting your two characters in opposition to each other.
Yes.
And I know lots of people will say, oh, well, Georgie and Levi are sort of grumpy sunshine. And like, that's the opposition. But really, like, I wrote a romance where these two people have something, like, have a deep understanding of each other. You know,
what's in common.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we really specifically kicked around, like, is this a small town romance episode or is this like a homecoming episode? And I think they have I think they're in conversation with each other, but I don't think they're the same thing at all, right? Because homecoming, you can come home in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
But I do think that the small town romance is almost always a homecoming romance in some ways, too.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Don't you think so?
I guess in theory, sure, because it's always about yourself in relationship. It's this community question, right? Like, who are you? One of the questions that I'm, you know, so interested in as a reader, especially, you know, in all romance, is this sense of like, who are you in relationship to, who are you perceived to be versus who you perceive yourself to be versus like who you really are in the world. And I think, the hallmark of the small town romance is, of course, community. And so I guess you do always have to come home in a small town romance, even if it's just like the veterinarian meets the local waitress.
Well, or even if someone's like new to the town, they're not coming home. They're still like finding their place in it. I don't know. Like it's
no, I think you're right in a like sort of broad sense.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like when people instead, it's like I go to the big city. Those are, right, like, I'm trying to find myself, like, absent of community almost. Like, I'm in a vacuum. Like, who am I? It's, like, pure, I don't know. It's really interesting. I don't think you can ever divorce the small town from the romance in a small town romance.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about Georgie as, like, a small town romance. Like, there were reasons why I set Georgie in this like fictionalized version of kind of a Chesapeake Bay sort of river town. But I don't know if the reasons were just that, like, that's how it felt right to write a homecoming romance. I mean, the truth is, I've written big city romances that I have tried to make feel like a small town.
Yeah. The last book felt small town romance.
Yeah. You know, to like use Sarah's word, community is like the, right? That's the through line. But what I will say is like,
the last book is Love at First, everyone. And it's set in Chicago and it's beautiful. And we've talked about that. We'll put links in show notes.
One thing that the setting did offer me was like, I guess a more sort of intense, like, microscope feeling in terms of how the characters feel about people around town seeing them. I mean, that can happen when you are from a suburb or when you're from
it
a city.
It feels different, though. Like, there is an
anonymity.
Thank you. I'm like, I know words.
I got you.
Right? Where it just doesn't feel the same no matter what, right, in the city. I also think, though, Kate, the other thing I found myself thinking, though, was like, and I know you and I have talked about this, is there's also the absence of, like, big money.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is a town full of working class people, and even though Levi's family has money, it's not like billionaire romance money,
right?
You know, it's, and I think like that was the other thing, is like the book itself feels very like normal, right? Like, it's just like people you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people you want to know. I mean, all the characters are so beautiful in this book, in the sense that like even the difficult characters are really relatable. I mean, we know all these people, we've spent time with all these people, and suddenly we're able to see these people in our lives in a different way, I think, through the lens of this book. Like, I adore Georgie's relationship with her best friend, mm-hmm. who is pregnant, and Georgie, you know, tells herself she's coming home to help. Like, to mm-hmm. this will be the thing. I mean, she's been a celebrity assistant. She's very good at that job for all the reasons that you already said, Kate. And she gets home and she's sort of ready to have purpose through this lens of like who she has been. And suddenly she realizes like, oh, but I'm not needed here the way I was expecting.
Her best friend is not a mess. And I really loved writing like a best friendship like theirs that like began in childhood. Like, I'm very lucky to have a childhood best friend. And the way she and I relate to each other is, I mean, it's just, it's so sort of special and different. And it's like very intimate in some ways, because they've seen you at so many different stages of your life. And they know these like core things about you that were there when you were like 8 years old. And Georgie and her best friend are like that. And I loved writing their relationship too. And every relationship in the book, I think, makes Georgie and Levi's coming together feel sweeter. I mean, like, that was the goal.
This week's episode of Fated Mates is sponsored by Lillian Lark, author of Deceived by the Gargoyles, which is a standalone romance in the Monstrous Matches series.
Here's what I'm for, Jen. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Grace, a curvy librarian witch, has a family who sounds pretty terrible. They judge her. They don't like the kind of magic she has. They don't like how she looks. And Grace doesn't want this family. She wants a family of her own that she can love and that will love her back, that she can grow old and happy with. And so she goes to a magic matchmaker and she gives that matchmaker a list of all the qualities she's looking for in the perfect mate. This matchmaker delivers her Elliot Bramblewick, a very good-looking gargoyle. And all of it is fine until Grace realizes, or maybe, and then Grace realizes, Elliot has two other gargoyle mates.
She's a lucky woman. I think this is perfect.
He hasn't told any of them about each other.
Oh.
I mean, he's told the two other ones know about him, but she doesn't know. So this book is all about how these three become four, and he takes her back to his gargoyle lair, and they, you know, show her the business.
And find love, because that's how romance works.
So this book is for anyone who has a little bit of a breeding kink, anyone who loves knotting, anyone who's looking for monster romances and polyamorous romances. I'm told swords do, in fact, cross here. And
that's really all you need to know.
It sounds pretty great. Am I downloading it now? Yes, I am.
If you were interested, you can find out more by following Lillian on Instagram at author.lillian.lark. And Deceived by the Gargoyles is available in print, ebook, and on KU. Thanks to Lillian for sponsoring this week's episode of Fated Mates.
Like, it felt to me like there, like, especially for Levi, it's also about acceptance. And I think not just like accepting himself or whatever, but, you know, like accepting that he has a place that can be different, but also really like,
I don't know, like letting go of the comfort of also having like a certain reputation, right? Like if you're just who Levi is to the people in this town, right? If you're just a flake like Georgie is and someone who kind of doesn't really get things done and is, you know, getting past that is also a little scary. Like there's comfort in inhabiting those rules that people make for you. And I thought that was the other thing that really, one of the things I think is like a real hallmark of your books, Kate, is like, you think you know where it's going. And then like when they have like the big like fight, you're kind of like, oh shit, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, of course it was going to kind of be this way. It just watching people like just run right into that wall that like surrounds them. And I think that's the part about homecoming romances in particular, maybe more than small town, is it's really like it's so internal.
Yeah. I mean, the theme, like I've said this before, I don't know if I've said it on the pod, but like I generally write to theme. Like I have a theme in mind. Like the theme in this book was reputation. Like I kept wanting to come back to it. Right. And you're exactly right. The relationship you have with your reputation, it's different, right? So you're right. Like Levi clings to his reputation because in some ways it allows him to live his life in a pretty sort of small and contained way. Whether he knows it or not, he's like grown comfortable with the reputation he has. And for Georgie, it's like, that reputation feels like a straitjacket in some way. She wants people to think of her a different way, she thinks, right? So, yeah, I guess I wanted to, and other characters in the book have their reputations too, like in sort of smaller and more subtle ways. But I just wanted to explore,
yeah,
what it's like to
carry that around with you.
Yeah, and I mean, all of us walk around with them, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I do think that's a real feature of the homecoming romance.
So, Sarah, you've been holding up some...
Yes, Sarah has a graph. Yeah.
I did homework. I feel like I really outdid myself today.
Yeah, is what we're talking about fit in with your little theory over there?
Take us to school, Sarah.
Okay. Well, when we decide, all right, we're going to do an interstitial on this particular trope, I'm always like, all right, well, what's the promise of the premise? Like when I'm looking for like the perfect homecoming romance, like what is it for me that really like scratches the itch? And so I sat down and I made a big list and there are tons. I didn't realize that this is probably one of my favorite tropes. Like, and I never think about it, but I really love a book where somebody comes back. And I love a book where somebody comes back in a lot of different ways. And so what I realized is there is a continuum. There is an XY axis. And then right before I started, I got on the podcast to record, I was like, there might be a Z axis too.
Listen, I love it when we make it mathy.
I'm going to take a picture so everybody can look. So you can't see, but this is my axis. And I've plotted all of the books that I was thinking about.
And what I'll Joseph read for Campbell everyone.
Shit over here.
The heroine's journey home.
Listen, so on the one side, so I feel like you either return defeated, from defeated, yes, to triumphant.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, nice. I would agree. Yeah.
So that's the what is it, X across.
That when and you then, get home, you're defeated.
Right. You come home like having lost
your job, yeah, lost, yeah, your dog, yeah, lost, yeah, your house, lost, you know, country
whatever,
music,
right,
style.
Or on the other side, you come home and you're like the top. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And Bobby Tom. You're Bobby Tom Denton.
Returning
to heaven, Texas.
Exactly.
You're like, I'm bringing in a movie to my town. That's how great I am.
Exactly.
I got you.
And you either, and then the Y axis, the up and down axis, for those of you playing along at home, at the top it says someone new, and at the bottom it says someone old, right? Meaning, so this, at the way bottom, it's like, my ex-wife, like the girl I bullied in
my high school sweetheart, right?
Exactly. Like the person, this is the match. The someone new, someone old is who you fell in love with, right? Or at the top, it's like, oh, there's just a nice new person in this town.
A cupcake baker.
Right. Exactly. And then, but then I think the Z axis, and I couldn't figure out how to visualize it because I'm not a math person, but I did star them, is what I'm referring to as the vengeance factor.
Maybe that's just a coefficient.
Meaning?
You just put it in front.
In some cases, the love part is tied up in, like, some real trying to prove, like, having to stick it to somebody who was mean to you, like, back in the day. So often the vengeance factor happens, you know, it happens in all of the quadrants. So this is my thing. And as we play along, I have colored pens and we're going to plot them and then we'll.
All right. I like love it. Vengeance.
I love you vengeance. You do love vengeance. Man,
that's, yeah.
So what I'm talking about here is, like, in my perfect world, this book looks like the vengeance factor is applied in the following way. Person comes back triumphant and decides that they are going to use their triumphant new identity to punish either the actual other main character or the other main character's father / brother / family.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Oh, my God. Like Joanna Shoup. Like,
yes.
What is it? Is it Prince of Broadway?
Yeah. And so, like, they return to the hometown. Well, I mean, for me, the book that is in the far, in this case, the furthest in the lower right-hand corner is Again the Magic. Lisa Clove is Again the Magic, right?
Yes.
Perfect.
And now I will tell you, I actually have, Again the Magic, the A plot and the B plot on this. And this proves, I have a whole theory that this proves Lisa Clapis is genius, because Again the Magic A plot is down here and the B plot is up here.
Here's what's really interesting about Sarah's little graph, okay, is that everything is going from, like, the top to the bottom in one way, and then there's two quadrants that are basically empty.
Yeah, but this is my own problem, I think.
Yeah, so what are the quadrants?
Just decent people up here. Just decent people falling
decent
in love.
Decent people falling in love, not interested in. Okay, and then what's the other one?
Possibly decent people falling in love down here, but
fair. Okay. Right? Like, does that make sense?
It
like,
does.
It's not like the books are evenly.
Oh, look,
there is, like a straight line through this.
I'm bringing it to my therapist. I'm going to be like, I masked my problem.
here it is. Wow. Okay, I like it.
So, but, like, Ain't She Sweet lives down there too. Like, the hero is sent away, like, in absolute shame by the heroine accusing him of sexual misconduct. He's her teacher, her English teacher, and she wants to punish him because he gives her a bad grade. He leaves. He writes this, like, mega hit of a book, returns to town, and then just, like, shames her. And then they fall in love.
There's a book that wouldn't get written today. Tell you what.
No.
No.
Man.
But Sugar Beth is like, she deserves it. She's terrible at the beginning. I mean, that's Susan Elizabeth Phillips. You know, it's a professional driver on a closed course.
Yeah.
But that has a vengeance star, too. The vengeance coefficient.
What's interesting, Sarah, is, okay, I'm going to, I think I'm right.
No,
you know, sometimes I say things. Yeah, is... in this case, I'm not necessarily interested in the vengeance going towards, like, the main character, right? So, for example, one of my favorites is we have the Jeannie Chin book that I put, I think it's Return to Cherry Blossom Way.
Yeah.
And the vengeance for her is to the people that were so terrible to her in high school. And this boyfriend was sort of collateral damage. Like, she's like, I can't stay here. They're so terrible to me. And then she leaves and he stays. And so it's like her. So it's not really like vengeance towards him. It's more like these people were terrible to me and I cannot be here again without, like, sort of telling them that, right?
Yeah. Well, that's allowed too. You can just be mad at other people.
Other people. It doesn't. Okay.
And just, like, fall for it. So see, that's a low vengeance.
Low
vengeance. High triumph. High old.
I feel like the ones I've brought to talk about are not vengeance. Really.
Not vengeancy.
No, well, I mean, well, one of them
maybe. Yeah. Ain't She Sweet is kind of like you bring it up all the time, and I'm bringing up Heaven, Texas.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that's really interesting about Heaven, Texas is that Bobby Tom has really been taken advantage of by the town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Gracie who realizes it.
Yeah.
And so it's like she's the one who's like, you don't owe these people you.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't figure, you know, his homecoming is, you know, this is the place he's always been the most comfortable and the most happy. He thinks it's the most perfect place in the world. And he has to face actually that it's not. And I think that's one of the reasons it's one of my favorite in this way is the reckoning isn't really with him. The reckoning is with, you know, like when a small town sends off their like golden child to the NFL and he makes good, who owns him? Right.
Oh, and I love that in a romance, like,
One
of the characters like defends the other characters.
Oh,
you know, either 100%. Against their family or the town. Yeah, that's the good stuff right
but
there.
But see, in that case, that book, Having Texas, can only really work because Gracie is new.
Yes.
Right? Like
100%.
Yes. Bobby Tom is someone else for her than he is for everyone else.
And she can see the things that that no one there, including him, can, right? Like
Exactly.
She's the outsider who's like, this isn't actually good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
And I love it. I love this.
Yeah. So, I wish we had a whiteboard.
I will say, I'm not like a sociopath. They're not all vengeance related, but I do like revenge.
Yeah. But obviously your mind is going there.
I mean, only some of them are starred. Only some of them. I also plotted Georgie, though. I feel like we could plot Georgie, maybe, on this. And I have a theory, but I would like to hear where you all fall.
I mean, there's no vengeance plot.
No, there's no. And I want to say, everyone, calm down. X and Y are...
Right.
No vengeance. I haven't drawn the vengeance thing. It's just here in the corner. There is no vengeance. But there is. But there's this like defeated triumphant thing, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, it is interesting.
I do think that that is the continuum of how people come home and in homecoming romances. And I think that in Georgie, part of why I love your book so much, Kate, is because it's never easy. Like it's never a plot. It's not like you can be like, well, she's definitely here on this coefficient, right? I don't even know if that's the right word, but my point is that I think Georgie would say she is on one, like somewhere very different on this line than I, as a reader, would put her.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really fascinating to me, like, because that's part of her growth is realizing like, oh, I'm not defeated. Like I'm not.
Right. Yeah. I think part of what the book is interested in doing and like, you know, hopefully when people read this, you know, hopefully they've kind of seen it even without me saying it. But of course, like, I think part of what the book is doing is challenging some of the things our society treats as defeat.
Like being out of a job, right?
Yeah. Or just...
But also returning home.
Yeah. And like being a career-minded person in general.
Yeah,
and,
right.
In some ways, it does try to like push back on that narrative of like, what does it mean to be seen as defeated and maybe like reject that narrative? And what does it mean to like be very successful? Like there are people in the book who are very successful by kind of every current societal standard we have and like think differently about that type of success too. So... Yeah, the book is interested in that.
It's funny because I was a pretty early reader for the book. And at one point, I like remember circling that Levi had thought about the word like career.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, I don't think he thinks about the word career.
Yeah, he has this line in the book. It's like one of my favorite lines that I wrote in the book. And like, I don't think I'm spoiling anything. But Georgie and he and Georgie are having a conversation. And she says something about like... getting a job, and she says, you know, like I can have this kind of job if I want it. And he sort of thinks to himself, what's work got to do with wanting? And he just sort of thinks like, that's like, I don't know what you're saying, right? Like, I think that's kind of an interesting thing that I guess I just wanted to explore like the notion of two people who feel like outcasts and
what
does it mean for those two people to like use their outcast status to kind of question everything about the society that they live in.
It's so good, everybody. You're going to love it. I hope you took off yesterday and read it.
But can we also just add one thing that I don't think we've really like unpacked all of the like thematic stuff, but can we talk a little bit about the relationship, how Levi gets into the mix here, which I think is a real delight. It's such a charming setup, which is
when Georgie was young, she had a huge crush on Levi's brother.
And Levi's younger brother.
In this book, the friend fic, there is a lot of reference to this beautiful, perfect younger brother of Levi. Yeah. And it never occurred to Georgie at age, whatever, 12 or 13, that Levi might be a reasonable person in the world. And now she is back.
Yeah.
And it's not the golden boy who is compelling. It's Levi and his adorable dog.
That's Levi and Hank, his dog. yeah, Levi is like, I would say, I know a lot of readers really love Aiden from Luck of the Draw, and I would say Levi is the closest.
I think that's
Aiden
true.
I have written.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Accurate. He's very tough on the outside, but a big softy on the inside. That's really my favorite kind.
This week's episode is sponsored by Love Sweet Arrow, a romance bookstore in Chicago, Illinois, where Jennifer lives.
Very exciting, everybody. So Love Sweet Arrow is the second brick-and-mortar romance bookstore in the U.S., and it's located in the south suburbs. You can get there by train or car. It's like a super cute little store, and they have all sorts of course, amazing romances. The whole front room is new, and then they have used romances in the back. But if you are not lucky enough to be close enough to visit, then what you can do is check out their website where they have surprise subscription boxes. And one of my favorite things, of course, I think we all love signed books. So right now you can look at their pre-order campaigns, and they have two that I think our readers will really be interested in, which is Heated Rivalry by Rachel Reed is a hockey romance everyone loves, and there's a paperback coming out. And then the other one is Melanie Johnson, who's a local Chicago author, has her newest rom-com, Too Wrong to Be Right, coming out. So if you cannot visit Love Sweet Arrow in person, then you can totally check out their website for really cute romance gifts, attire, just all the fun romance stuff that you want.
Love Sweet Arrow is owned by a mother-daughter team, Roseanne and Marissa Backlund. And this is my favorite thing about them, because it's proof that we learned to love romance from the people who came before us, and I love seeing them together whenever I do see them together. So, thanks to Love Sweet Arrow and the team there for sponsoring the episode.
All right, so we each have some other homegoing romances, homecoming, homegoing. Let's talk about some ones we might recommend that people could read if they love Georgie.
I brought three, but like one of those three is like multiple wrapped in one.
Nice.
My first one was like one that I read really recently because of Sarah's recommendation. Sarah was posting about it, I think, on her Instagram, and that's Angelina Lopez's After Hours on Malabar Street. Was that one of yours too?
I mean, I wasn't going to go deep, but yes, you should go deep.
I loved it because, I mean, I think it, as we've been talking, probably like what's emerged in our discussion is that like one thing we enjoy is like when the homecoming is very fraught. And this is a great example of that. It's like, you know, the heroine comes home because her grandmother is ill. It's like a very common sort of like homecoming setup. And like, she knows she may need to help taking over this bar that her family has owned. And there's someone new in the mix. There's a professor in their small town in the mix, and they sort of clash. But the homecoming is very fraught for all these different reasons. Like, it's her reputation in that town. It is the town's like long history with racial discrimination. It is the town's long history with like class, you know, like a big distinction among classes in the town. And I just, this book was able to do so much at the same time that it was like incredibly hot. and I just was really impressed by all the things this book was doing at once, including setting up like the future books in the series. And I loved it. I just, like, I found it so compelling. I know both of you read it, too, so.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it, too. I put it on the best of the year list, and because I think it's also just so sexy. And there's so, and then I, and at the same time, I learned so much from this book, like yeah. about the world, about America and how it,
yeah.
how the West was built. I mean, it was, which, I mean, you don't always expect from a romance novel about
yeah.
a really sexy bartender and her sexy professor.
It was terrific. I loved it.
Not her sexy professor. I mean, her ultimately sexy.
I even loved, and this is a real achievement. There are like parts of the book where it describes like the drinks that are getting made or the food uh-huh. that was getting served uh-huh. at the bar that she takes over. And like, I was even compelled by that. And that's really saying a lot. Because
that
normally
is...
I'm like, let me just skip anything about
all about food.
Mm-hmm. If you would ask me if I like this trope, I would not have said yes. Like, I just wouldn't have. And I think partly because I think it's now it's what I understand from Sarah is what I don't like is when they come home defeated.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
And it's because I don't like people being defeated. And often it's a woman. I mean, this mm-hmm. is not a trope where a man comes home defeated, right? Uh-huh. And so I think that, you know, I mean, I've talked about how much I like a character backed into a corner. But that to me is very different than a character who has been defeated. And I think that's why it feels like, okay, if you're coming home defeated, then any choice to stay there feels like surrender. And I don't really like them to feel that way either, right? And so I think one of the things that this has helped me realize is like the books that do work for me like this are like, right. So I really love that Jeannie Chin book. And I was kind of like, I don't know why I love this. I do not love books where people go home, but she wasn't coming home defeated. Like she had a job and she was doing well and she just needed to go see her family. And I think that it really has helped me understand like the difference is the starting point.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's like, you know, then because then I was like, OK, no, there's like I ended up looking up like small town romance on Goodreads. There's like literally 100 pages of them. And I was like, what have I read? Right. Because sometimes I'm kind of like, and then I found some and I was like, well, I think that's it. It's like the common factor is the situation under which they come home has to work for
me. That's really fascinating.
You know, like I don't think there would be anything for me on that side of the graph. I don't want it. Right. And I think defeated looks different ways. So a book that I really like is called Beauty and the Baller by Ilsa Madden Mills. And I've maybe mentioned this book before, but Nova is the main character and she is coming home because her younger sister is like a junior or senior in high school, but their mother has died. And Nova does not want to go home. It's like Bluebell, Texas. And she, you know, this is not a place she ever wanted to go home. She's been in New York. She's, you know, doing all this stuff. I don't think she's necessarily having the greatest success there, but she's fine. But she realizes she cannot uproot her sister, right? And so the situation under which she's coming home is one where she has made a decision, right? Like, it doesn't have to be this way, but she's like, I'm going to prioritize my sister and her needs right now. And this is going to be, like, a couple years where I have to stay at home and, you know, move back into, like, the house and do all this stuff. And I think that that's probably why it works for me. And now what ends up happening is her next-door neighbor is now the high school coach, and it turns out that he was in the NFL and they had like a one night stand a couple years before. I mean, so there's someone in town that she like unknowingly is really connected with. And, you know, she certainly has to grapple with like, who was I when I lived here in high school and how can I like kind of make my peace with being here again? But it's never something where the reason, you know, the reason she's there is tragic, but not like, I have no other options, right?
Yeah.
She's the one who decides that. And I think, you know, it's also like a really fun book. I don't often find books really like funny. And this book is not called like a rom-com, but there's a lot of like, I don't know, like a lot of banter. And I think that this author is one who, when her books work for me, like they really work. And Nova is just sort of like this screwball character, but who is like really hugely committed to taking care of her sister and like, kind of providing like the structure and support she's going to need to kind of launch successfully into adulthood. And she does this in a way that's very like it's both selfless, but also matter of fact. Like this is what anyone would do in this situation. So I just have to buckle down and do it. And I found that
sounds good.
Yeah, I found that really admirable rather than really like kind of like, oh, here we are starting with this like miserable woman in a miserable circumstance with no other choices. That's not a thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jen, I don't think if we've ever talked about these books, we've never done an episode on these, but how do you feel about how do you feel about like home renovation romances?
No.
Okay. See, this is interesting to me because I feel like home renovation is often the thing that gets people home. Like brings people
home,
I think
that's
not,
right.
Not in
I
triumph or defeat.
That.
Like maybe the middle on the axis home renovation.
Yeah.
Or like Jill Shalvis's Lucky Harbor, which I have recently talked about in the podcast because I think it's like a textbook perfect small town series.
It's great. Yeah.
Like those three sisters inherit an inn or they inherit a like and then like one falls for the contractor, one falls for the whatever. Like I forget who all
if
this
you, you can, if look, you guys can see Jen's face.
I know. I'm like, if the three of us inherited a ramshackle inn
well,
in the middle
Kate
of nowhere.
You would obviously be in charge because I would get bored and you would be like, I'm not
I
coming.
Would be like, I would be like, pull the plug,
I would
have
to do everything
the pie.
For that.
Like sell it and split it in thirds. That's the person. That's the one I would be. Yeah, no, that
yeah,
sounds.
That might that actually to go back
terrible.
To what I said at the beginning. That might be the circumstance that gets me to give up on y'all. I would not
imagine?
Be your fated mate anymore.
Yes, but it would be so easy because neither of us would negotiate at all on your choices. We'd just be like, great, whatever you want. We're so happy for you.
That's true. You would spend like 18 hours like really thinking about the best light fixtures and Sarah and I would just be like,
yeah,
sure,
I'd be
ma'am.
Like, does it work? Like,
I don't know, I guess. What's a light fixture?
No, Sarah would come in at like like an hour before I was going to press buy and she would be like, look at this chandelier though.
Wow, drag me. You'd be like, now you know what my husband feels like whenever we try to buy anything for this house. He's like, that's not energy efficient. That this has LEDs.
I will actually tell you a funny story, which is I was with my friend Elizabeth at Target and I bought a lamp and I brought it home and I put it out and she's like, so I just want to check. You just were able to like pick out a lamp and just do it. And I was like, I don't understand your question really. And she's like, you didn't have to like consult with Mr. Reed's romance and like have 93 con. And I just was looking at her like, what are you talking about? We needed a lamp. So I procured one. This isn't a discussable thing in my family.
So you didn't think about how it fit in with your decor? Or...
No, I'm not really. That's not my.
Well, let's never inherit a
property
to get
together.
Yeah,
I don't think there's like a super risk of that. But
yeah. No. Maybe we have some listeners, Sarah.
A listener
who's like,
is currently
I'm rewriting my will just to put these three ding dongs in the
right
worst
now.
Possible scenario.
I'm going to say, while we're on this topic, I'm going to say one of mine, because it goes with this.
Because it is a home renovation romance.
They're on that, I don't know, what'd you call it? Axis? I'm not going to. But you know, like for the last few years, four authors. So these are authors that write a lot. It's Maisie Yates, Jackie Ashenden, Caitlin Cruz, and Nicole Helm, who all
they know the
write,
job.
Yeah, they all write across sort of subgenres in romance, and yeah, like people who really solidly know the job, and they have like come together over the last few years to do these anthologies. And I'm not going to be like good at remembering the names. Like one of them is, I think the first one is like Sweet Home Cowboy or something like that. Everybody knows that I love a cowboy romance. I love men who do chores. But they usually are like, the premise of them is like, you know, four half sisters that all inherit a property from their grandmother or something like that, right? Or four friends who agreed to come back to this town.
And
so
open
like,
up a bread and breakfast
yeah,
or whatever.
Something like that, right? Like every anthology has been a premise like that. And like each novella in the anthology is just like very tightly constructed. It hits the homecoming spot, right? Like some of them meet someone new. Some of them like reconnect with somebody from their past. And they all are just like really effective romances. And every time one has come out, I've picked it up.
All right. I'm going to talk about
revenge.
No, it's not revenge. I'm not going to talk about revenge. My first pick is one. It's the sixth in the Lily Everett Sanctuary Island series. Lily Everett also writes as Louisa White, but she wrote a really beautiful home, not hometown, although one very beautiful town romance. This series is set on a small island off the coast of the Carolinas, and it's a horse sanctuary, and it's like beautiful and evocative and like great. And then also Louisa just has like this really just crisp way of writing very funny situations for characters who are really like just so authentic and real. Anyway, this book, Home at Last, is the sixth. You should read all of them, but it is the homecoming one. Marcus, the hero, left Sanctuary Island, I don't know, some number of years ago, like a while, 6 or 8 years ago, after his mom died. And he has not been back since. And he became a body, like a professional bodyguard. And he's like gruff and quiet and big and
like it. Yum. You're selling it.
And then he's like, I need to, like, something happens and he decides, like, I can't do this kind of high stakes stuff anymore. Like, I'm just gonna go home. So he goes home to Sanctuary Island. When he gets there, he discovers that before he left, he had sort of broken the heart of this girl, Quinn, who they were young. They were in their, you know, late teens. And she had this like wicked crush on him. And they had one night or like a little bit of time. And then he broke her heart. And when he gets back and he's ready to like start working the neighborhood bar and like reclaim part of his youth in this town or like his life in this town, he realizes the entire town hates him because they think that he broke Gwyn's heart. Like, just...
And so he's not, like, did he not think it was that big of a deal?
No, he knows. And he had a thing for her too, but he's like, he was so broken, you guys, and like not a good person. Certainly not good enough for Quinn, who was amazing and beautiful and fantastic. And so he really was just like, he was doing the right thing by leaving Quinn.
At least I'm going to buy this as soon as we get off this call.
Yeah, you're like, I love it. I love it already.
I'm going to start with number one in the series. And I'm going to work up to it.
So basically, but it's so great because Quinn is kind of like, it's okay. Like everyone's like, it's not okay. So there's this like, again, big community feel here. And so she's like, listen, nobody's even coming into the bar. Like, this whole small town has just, like, exited him.
Oh, I love that.
And so she's like, I have an idea. Why don't we fake date for a little while? And she's like, in fact, it would help me because my mother has gone, like, off the deep end. And she is convinced that my parents' relationship is very, like, unhealthy. And she has hired a relationship guru who wants to do, like... meditation retreat in the woods to like solve to with them as a marriage counselor, and my mom wants me to go. And so
this is like a great little cocktail of tropes.
Would just be better for me if somebody was there with me because this is bananas. And
too much.
It is fully bananas. Like, there's a standing stone circle, they have to burn stuff inside it, and the whole time Quinn and Marcus are like, this is crazy. And like, so there's that sort of feel of a very sort of real feel of like it's them against the world, but also like they've had a thing for each other from the beginning, and who were they and who are they and how they've grown. And it's so good. I'm going to read it again after talking about it with you. I'm going to read it this week.
Amazing.
So anyway, that's Lily Everett's Home at Last.
That sounds so good.
I have two more I want to talk about. How many? I'm like, what's our numbers here? I guess I want to briefly mention The Road to Roseven by Naima Simone. Because now I would like to say, like, what's interesting about this book to me is this book is like, I would say I typically like my angst in a romance novel to be 37 out of 100. And this is like 37,000 out of 100. Mm. So,
well, it's Naima.
It's Naima. And but what I like about it, so Sydney is the main character, and she is pregnant, and she has decided that what she really needs to do is go back to Rose Bend, which is the town she grew up in, because that's where she wants to raise her child, and thinks it's like really, it's like truly fascinating to me. I cannot think of another romance novel that has this in it. Is her ex-husband is the one who is the father. They essentially had, I can't remember exactly, like, were in the process of getting a divorce, but kind of had, like, one of those nights, you know? And he really thinks, like, oh, well, you're going to come back to me now that you're pregnant. She's like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm really not. Like, our divorce, that is separate, right, from how I feel about being married to you. And so she goes back home, really with her parents, like, not understanding this choice, like, kind of like, wait, your ex-husband who you're divorced is the father, you know what I mean? And she's like, yeah, this is what I want. And like, but back to my whole, like, it's really on her terms. Hmm. And she meets Coltrane, who is the mayor, I think, of Rose Bend, and also really dealing with his own feelings of guilt about the loss of his, like, wife and I think their child. So this is, I mean, angst factor 800 gazillion. I mean, I just, you know, and I think, but that's the part that's really interesting is she is so strong and knows who she is. And he is someone who is really struggling with, like, how do I deal with this loss in my life? And is it even okay for me to try and move on with what, you know, people in town are going to think, again, is like a ready-made family, right? It's really, you know, Naima knows how to pull your, you know, I don't know, the, you know, the waterworks, but this was, I mean, she must have been like channeling spirits or something when she wrote this, because it is super angsty. And, super and angsty. I think for the right reader, you are going to love it, but it just definitely had that feeling. I just really remember thinking, like, this is interesting to me where someone's like, I know that I'm going to have judgment, but this is where I want to raise my family because there's things about my childhood that, although they were imperfect, are the kinds of things I want my child to know. It was fascinating.
Yeah, I really love that because sometimes it's like, sometimes it does feel like small town homecoming stories are where like low angst kind of shines.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting that's like really subverting that.
Yeah, big time. And also I will say, and I think I was really trying here to go against type, like his angsty feelings are the ones that are way bigger than hers, right? He's the emotional wrecking ball in the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of mine is, I think this is the last one I brought, although now my brain is like pinging with other ones. But the last one I brought for today was like a book I read, I think last year when it came out, and there's been a lot of talk about it online, but Kate Canterbury's In a Jam, which hit a lot of sweet spots for me.
That's great.
Yeah. I think there was like a quirkiness to some of the characters. So there's like a child in the romance, which like typically that is, it's like food and drink for me. I'll skip past ending the child, but this child is like a top-notch character, just a really foul-mouthed, hilarious,
perfect
kid. And the premise is like Shay, the heroine, inherits this tulip farm. She's got to get married. It's a lot of romance reasons for the setup. But the hero has loved her for a long time, right? Like loved her when they were in high school together, and she never really got it. But he has sort of carried a torch for her all this time. And now he runs this farm. He makes jam. He's delicious. The thing I loved a lot about this romance. I loved like the small town atmosphere. I loved her kind of discovery of herself in this town that she has sort of complicated feelings for. But one of the things I really loved about it is that like it was a very, it was a really tactile romance.
Yeah.
And what I mean is that like she lets those characters touch.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like she lingers on those touches. You know, like he puts a hand on her back and Kate Canterbury is going to describe how it feels, right? Uh-huh. And it just feels like that book sinks into romance in a way that I think sometimes we're missing. She really dwells on those moments. And I love that book. I thought it was really romantic. I thought it was really engaging. And I think it'll be a comfort read for me.
I love it. Sarah, do you have more? I have one more.
I do. I have lots more. All right. So I want to talk about A Lot Like Adios.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's a, so I,
that's a
I
great feel, one. Yeah.
So my most full quadrant is they return triumphant and then end up with someone old, someone who like they've known forever. And I think, I don't know what that says about me, but it just is, that's the one I like the best, I think. This is that sort of it's sort of that. But also I think it really speaks to what we were talking about before with you know, again, community, but also the hero has a really interesting arc here. So the premise of this, I don't think we've talked that much about this book actually on the podcast. We did, and you had me at Ola deep dive. But the hero and heroine of this book were best friends when they were growing up, and like so close that they actually had a friend. They had a friend fic. They wrote fanfic back
That's
and
right.
forth
they
between
did.
Each other. Actually, yeah. So look, this is so appropriate. I had intended mm-hmm. this the whole time. And then, so Gabe, they're both from immigrant families. We know Michelle from, she is one of the three heroines of this series that, the Primas of Power series that Alexis is currently writing. So he leaves his family and he moves to Los Angeles. It's all set in the Bronx. He moves to Los Angeles. He becomes a like celebrity. He runs celebrity gyms.
Right.
Like, he's like a trainer.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And then his partner is like, well, you're from New York and there are also celebrities in New York. And so what if we open like a gym there? Do you know, we need somebody who's like good at marketing. And Michelle is like a superior, she's like a great marketer. And so Gabe is like, okay, well, I can call this person who I know. I left on like not great terms. Like I wanted to get out and like do something and be somebody outside of my family and like the world that I had grown up in. And I left her there and we haven't talked since. And Michelle feels really resentful about this. Like it was us. Like we were mm-hmm. friends. So he calls her and she says, she makes the deal with him that she's like, I'll do it, but you have to stay with me. And we have to work out like what happened between us all those you know, however many years ago. So, I mean, it's forced proximity a little. It's like a little like dash of forced proximity in there because they are living there. He is essentially staying with her. But one of the things that I think Alexis does so well in all of her books is sort of paint the picture of how complex families are. And in this case, particularly like immigrant families, like the first generation of the American, like of an American kid in an immigrant family. Because, you know, there is a big push-pull. Gabe's family is pissed that he has left. He has left them in New York and he's moved to LA and he's made a life for himself there. And he's been incredibly successful, returns triumphant,
yes.
right? But like at the same time, it feels like such a betrayal to them. And he has to reckon with who he is in relationship to his family. And one of the things that I think we see in Levi, too, in Georgie All Along is this. And I don't know, maybe I'm thinking a lot about this because it's January and we've just come through the holidays. But this question of like who you are to your family seems to never change.
Yeah.
Even now, right? Like I'm 40, in my 40s. And it's not important how far into my 40s I am, but like I'm in my 40s and still this, like over the holidays, I had a holiday with my mom and my sister and my brother. And like, we all fell into
old
the
pattern.
Roles,
yeah.
you know? And so, and I think Alexis senses this so keenly in all of her books and her writing. It just, it's so sharp when it comes to that. And then also it's just bananas sexy.
Yeah.
I love this one. I also love it because I like that the coming home is not to a small town here, right? It's
right to the city.
It's to a big city where there is a rich community.
Yeah, that's great. I have another one, and I know I've talked about this book before, but like, you know how some books you just love and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
It is Sophie Jordan's Fury on Fire.
Oh yeah. I love that book so much.
Yeah. I don't know if it really qualifies, but it does to me because North Callahan is being released from jail and he is going back home to the town that thinks he is a criminal.
Yeah, that's a homecoming, I'd say.
Yeah, right?
That counts.
And I think that's part of the reason that I really like it is his whole vibe is basically like, fuck these people, right? Like, I don't need your acceptance. I don't need you. I don't need your approval. I don't need anything, but I live here and I'm from here and I'm coming back here. So it's like bursting back into town with every chip you could have on your shoulder, right? And I really think that I love that a lot, right? Like there's something about that because, of course, I guess this would in normal cases maybe see like defeated, but he's not. He's just like, I know what I did and why I did it, and it doesn't matter to me what you people think. And of course, who he ends up falling in love with is his next door neighbor. It's like a duplex, right? So she lives next door, Faith Walters. And I think her brother is the sheriff or her dad was the sheriff, right?
Of course. Of course. It have to be.
Of course. Yeah. And, you know, she was younger, doesn't really know who he was, isn't like sort of caught up in that sort of story about who he was. But she is also the only one willing to kind of accept him for who he is. And this whole series, I think, really plays around with this, like what happens when you are coming home from prison, essentially. And, you know, it's not too far away. I think it's like an hour and a half away. But, you know, you might as well be, in a different solar system for like the experience you've had. And I really, really, really loved this series. But this book in particular is the one that I reread a lot because I think that it's that perfect mix of like, I'm home on my own terms and I don't care what you people think. And you know, and she is like, has been the town's like golden child, right? In some ways, her entire life. And so to take up with this man who is a pariah in the town and to champion him is a journey for her, too. I thought it was great. I love it. I love that book.
As usual, my TBR stacking up.
Yeah, well, that's the job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I, like Sarah, probably have like a bunch that I can just mention.
Yeah, I do want to talk about historicals.
I was going to say historical, too. Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Do you have one?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm a big fan of Julianne Long.
Who
I think is a really beautiful writer. She's writing a series right now. It's called The Grand Palace on the Thames. But her previous series, the Penny Royal Green series, her previous historical series, it was like a very long-running series about these two families. That, you know, are the two families are kind of at odds and both families have like a bunch of children. So the series is very long. Some of the, they all sort of overlap in various ways. But from the very beginning of the series, there is talk of the love story between Olivia Eversee and Lion Redmond, and the whole entire series references them in various ways. The fact that Lion Redmond left and Olivia has sort of, she's not like been in mourning, but she was devastated by him leaving. And like, is Lion ever going to come back? All this stuff. And the series sort of culminates in his coming back. And it's the title of the book is The Legend of Lion Redmond, which is like,
It's a great title.
The perfect title for this conclusion to this series. It also has this like beautiful cover with the two of them are embracing on the front. And she's wearing this beautiful red dress. Anyway, this, I mean, I just think that that book is really interesting, primarily for how it built through, like, over the course of like a dozen books. I just think it's very fascinating how she built to that homecoming story. So I think that's an interesting one to think about for that theme.
Yeah. I think historicals do this in really interesting ways. I mean, obviously, this is where vengeance often comes in. Like, I myself have written a homecoming, have, like, the rogue not take it. No, sorry. A Rogue by Any Other Name is a homecoming book, right? Where, and it's about vengeance. I mean, it's about getting your inheritance back and, like, ruining the man who ruined you. And so that's probably where, like, my... like absolute love of the vengeance, you know, factor comes in. I want to name check Gorilla Twins, which we recently talked about on the Twins episode. The Earl Takes All is a homecoming romance. He literally begins with the hero looking at the obituary, like at the obituary of his own, about himself and how everybody hated him. So again, that sort of immediate reckoning of who you are. Who you were versus who you might become, who you might be.
Yeah.
I was going to add, I think the other thing that's interesting and historical is that sometimes what pulls you back is responsibility. Like you have some sort of responsibility you have to take care of.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So one of my favorites is It Takes Two to Tumble by Cat Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
Where
that's a good one.
Yeah, he's like, it's like a kind of a loose retelling of... what's the one with Julie Andrews and The Hills Are Alive? Oh, The Sound of
Music.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the one. He's a ship's captain, but his kids are like running feral in the streets of the town.
I love
it. And the local vicar is taking care of them. And he, you know, comes home and he's basically like, look, all I want to do is get back to my ship. But then it's like, no, all he wants to do is stick around and hang out with Ben Sedgwick.
Yeah. He's such a good writer.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's great.
I love a ship captain.
Of course. But I mean, it's responsibility, right? Like he and the being torn between like family responsibility and then like professional responsibility.
Yeah.
It's so great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like when home comes to you in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah.
Responsibility. It's sort of.
Yes. That's on
it's
your
like
door.
That Diana Quincy book with the twins who, you know, the Duke Who Ravished Me and like. It begins with him, like, having an orgy in his giant palace as a duke. Like, no cares, no responsibilities. And then, boom, there are eight-year-old twins on the doorstep and their governess. Like, home comes to you.
Uh-huh.
I do just want to... I know people are always asking about medievals. They're always... And I know that some of you out there, like, have been asking about Guardian Ward. And I want to name check... The Arrow by Monica McCarthy, where he is one of the great warriors of Robert the Bruce. When Monica came up with this series, she came up with it as like Navy SEALs, but make it medieval. So if that sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, that series is awesome.
This is a series for you. He is one
That's a good audio book, by the way. It's good on audio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah, I listened to it on audio.
So the Arrow, he's a marksman, a shooter. He, you know, has a bow. And he has a ward. I mean, they never interact at all. And he comes home finally from war because he's been seen. Like now people are, he has to basically go into hiding because now people can identify him. And he arrives home and his ward is no longer the kid he left behind. She's like a real beautiful woman. And she wants him. Like if you love a romance, and I think medievals really land this concept, like she sets her eyes for the hero and just goes for him, and he's like,
what?
He's lost from the start, but there's a lot of like I can't here, even though everybody's overage. This book was written at a time when
Yeah,
this is not from the 80s.
Is it?
It is safe in that sense.
I have lots of others. I just want to name check Taking the Heat, which we did a deep dive on.
Oh, yeah.
In
That's
the second
a great
season
one.
By Victoria Dahl, where the heroine comes home from New York City to a small town in Idaho, Wyoming.
Wyoming.
Somewhere there.
One or the other.
Sorry, guys, if you live out there. I love you. And the hero is a library. That's Conolingus Gabe, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is that whole series. There's another one. I think the second one in that series is like flirting with disaster.
Is that
like
the artist?
Isn't the medical textbook. Right. There's one where she like really wanted to leave and then couldn't. And I mean, I think like that whole series plays around with like this little town and what it's like to live there, like to leave or stay. So,
right.
Yeah.
I also think Beach Read falls into this category.
Sure.
After it.
For those of you who haven't, for the, you know, 15 of you who haven't read Beach Read, it will fall into that category for you. The heroine has to go. She doesn't go home to her home. She goes home to a house where her father's died. And she goes home to a house on a lake where she and her father had like had many memories, and discovers that her father has had another, a whole other family or a whole other relationship with a woman who's not her mother. And so there's a lot of, but at the same time, Balls for the Neighbor. It's very, I mean, it's a delight. I loved Beach Read. And then The Bollywood Bride is also on my list.
Oh, great one.
That's
a great one.
Sonali Dev. I was here like, what do I pick? The Bollywood Bride, Sonali Dev's, one of her early, early books. The heroine.
Her first,
grew
right?
up in Chicago and then... It moves to India and becomes a Bollywood star. And
huge
leaves,
angst.
Leaves behind a boy who, like, this very sweet boy who, like, he was her first love when they were young. And she comes back for her cousin's wedding in Chicago. And she is the biggest star in Bollywood. And, so much angst about why she feels she can't be with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
How he's so patient with, like, I love a hero who is just so patient as the heroine works through her stuff. And I really, really love that book. It's my favorite of Sonali's books, I think.
There's one more I wanted to shout out, which is Delilah Green Doesn't Care by Ashley Herring Blake.
Mm-hmm.
This is like your force back home. Like, you can't avoid
well,
it any longer.
Well, isn't that also a renovation?
It's a wedding.
Oh, no, the next one is a renovation.
So, you know, sure.
Jen's like, no.
I was like, it's a wedding, but okay. Delilah is a photographer. Her, like, half-sister or stepsister, I can't remember, Astrid is getting married and has essentially, like... At the beginning of the book is like calls her up and is like kind of tell me you're coming. And Delilah's like kind of like, what is she talking about? Well, she's talking about the fact that she has contracted with Delilah to come and be her photographer for like the 2 weeks that is like setting up the wedding and all the wedding events and stuff. And she just does not want to go and is really convinced that like she's just going to have a miserable time. And this is, you know, she really has no other choice and the money's good. So she kind of really can't avoid it. And then she falls in love with her Astrid's bridesmaids, this woman Claire, who is someone she did know when they were younger, but now they're seeing each other in a new way.
Yeah, it's Astrid Parker Doesn't Fail is the second book in that series.
And that's a renovation.
And it's a renovation book.
Good luck, everyone. I support you.
Listen, I think we really did the job here.
I mean, wow. We covered it.
Tell us your favorites, everyone. I want to hear about your homecoming romances with or without vengeance.
We're going to put a blank template of Sarah's graph in order for our consideration. Please put it in the right place with a vengeance factor marked.
Yeah, I also want to know if anyone had like a real life homecoming romance.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
They went home and it was
Thanksgiving and you were in a bar and that boy from high school.
Yeah.
Listen, that's the dream for many. Kate Claiborne, Georgie All Along is out right now.
Mm.
my goodness.
Stores everywhere. We love it, and we love you. And Friday night, you and I are going to be together at last.
Together at last in person
at East City Books in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be talking about Georgie a lot and having a great time. Tickets for the in-person event are sold out, but you can buy tickets and see it virtually. And yeah. Join us. And we would love that. And you can buy copies of Georgie signed from East City. Kate will sign them that night.
I'm going to place my order right now. I'm so excited. I'm going to leave a long thing about how you have to sign it to be your dear Jennifer. I look forward to our home renovation project.
Yes, that's right.
I can't wait till we inherit a bed and breakfast together.
Because I know all you want to do is sell your third to me. Thank you.
This was Fated Mates for the week. Thanks so much to Kate Claiborne for joining us. We love Kate. We love Georgie all along. Don't forget to snatch that up wherever you read your books. I'm Sarah McLean. I'm here with my friend Jen Prokop. We love romance novels, and we are so grateful to Lillian Lark and Love's Sweet Arrow, a Chicago romance bookstore, for sponsoring the episode this week. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, love you guys.